Accession number 24192, Reel 2.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 2. We're talking about your time training at the Regimental Depot of the Royal Norfolk Regiment at Britannia Barracks from 1946, you know, August on. We'd like to look at, you know, going through the typical day and picking up sessions of training. We've done drill. What about PT? You mentioned it earlier, but
again, you'd be you dress up in your shorts and your vest. Not all the time, but depending on the weather. Probably do a run initially to warm up, and then finish up in the gym, ropes, climbing the ropes, doing wall bars and all that sort of thing.
Were they still doing a lot of the old physical jerks?
Oh yeah, we used to do the physical jerks. That used to be part of the warm up. Physical jerks, rope climbing, the beam, horse, all that sort of thing. Everything that.
What about cross-country runs? Were they still running around the mouse hold? Or
we used to run around the mouse hold, I used to like it. I liked it.
Did it improve? I mean, you played a bit of football, but you weren't, sort of athlete before. Did it improve your physical condition?
Yeah. I always found that if you didn't realise how fit you were until something had to be done fairly sort of hard. And I always found it reasonably easy. I can't remember any time when I couldn't do it.
Now, what about the sort of weapons training? Starting with a rifle, how did the army set about teaching you to shoot and to look after your Lee Enfield this time?
Well, initially, issued your rifle.
Was that your rifle?
That was the same rifle you had all the time. Because eventually when we get onto the range, it's already zeroed in for you, so other people could use it. It just means.
Now, what do you mean it was zeroed in for you? Can you say
when you went onto the range, you had say five shots at the target, and then the sight was altered. If you were hitting a bullseye or inner of the bullseye, the sight was changed so that you would hit the bullseye, and then that's how the sight was. You were set then for any time you went on the range, and you just fired. You didn't have to do anything to change the sight or anything.
So it was sort of levelled up for your eyesight, and or if there's anything wrong with the rifle, it was allowed for by the way the sights were set. And what about shooting? I mean, the army had a way of holding the rifle, a way of lying down with the rifle. I mean, can you tell us a bit about how they went through it? And was it as you'd been taught before?
Yes. Initially, everything was done at the prone position. So teaching you how to hold the rifle. Always held the rifle with the left hand up by the sling swivel, the upper sling swivel, with your right hand around the small of the butt, with your finger along the trigger guard, ready for the lifting the bolt or pushing the safety catch forward with the thumb. The right hand was there, pushing the safety catch forward with the thumb, lifting the bolt, pulling it back, because you had your magazine under the bottom of the rifle, pushed up from the bottom.
Still a clip of five?
Clips of five, yeah. Clips of five. Oh, the magazine held 10.
You could double load still?
You could double load, yeah.
And how did they teach you to aim? Because I think they had a thing that they used to recite. I don't know whether you know, but how did they teach you to aim? What was it you had to bear in mind?
Well, you had to get the foresight in the centre of the aperture. And on the target, of course. And I can't remember the exact wording for it, but you had to get the aperture in the centre of the foresight. Foresight in the centre of the aperture and on the target. That's the way it worked. And the teaching for holding the rifle was quite simple, really, as I found anyway. And stripping the Lee Enfield was quite easy.
How would you strip it down?
Well, you had at the end of the bolt, at the working part, the end of the bolt, the fore nearest the chamber, there was a small part which you lifted up and just slid the bolt straight out. At the back, took the magazine off first, of course, And that's about all you took off, as far as the cleaning and the stripping down goes on a Lee Enfield. So you had the pull through for the barrel, which you dropped down, and after firing you used oily flannelette on the end of the pull through, pulled it through.
Is this the 4x2 still?
Yeah, they still use that. Yeah. And in fact, they still use it now, I think. Yeah, they do, because my son got a roll for me. Pull it through probably about two or three times after firing with an oily flannelette. Change the flannelette to dry. If it's really bad, then you had a rod with a little brush on the end, which you put through once. And then dry the flannelette. That should about do it.
And how did they inspect it?
Well, you were at the port arms, and they came along and took the rifle off you, held it up, looking through from the end of the rifle through the barrel, because you had you. Except it was the worst part, the coach read through the barrel, and that's the way they inspected it. And of course, you inspect around with the working parts and all that sort of thing. And
what about actually firing it? I mean, you'd fired it before, but did they talk to you about the impact on your shoulder and holding it?
Yeah, they do. You had to pull it into. Well, if you didn't pull it into your shoulder, then you weren't firing it correctly. So you had to pull it into your shoulder, pull it in hard, and no problem.
Now, were you a good shot? And what made you a good shot? I mean, there's lots of things. There's eyesight, steadiness, timing, all sorts of things. But
yeah,
What do you think made you a good shot?
I think the eyesight, the way I held the rifle, the practice that I had before probably made me a good shot as well. Leading up to the training before and then. And I mean, even going, well, later on, I was find out when I was 45, we're still running down the range, firing a rifle. But I always felt that it was easy. Everything sort of turned out easy for me, actually. So I had.
What about other weapons?
Brain gun.
That's your introduction to the brain gun. I mean, what did you think of the brain gun, and what was it like to strip, to fire, to use?
I think the brain gun was a good gun, actually, providing it was kept in good working order, oiled and maintained.
Was it difficult to oil and maintain, or was it just a?
No, it's quite easy, actually. Take off the magazine, and you had a rivet went straight through the bodywork, pulled back the butt, and slid out the working parts. The butt came away from the body. The tripod came away from the body, and and you just got on with it, cleaned it. It was fairly easy to clean, actually, because the working parts were fairly solid block. So the main thing was the pin in the area of the pin where they fired the shot, because the gases and things from the rounds would cause caulk on the forward part of the working parts. So he concentrated on that, and it never got very dirty, actually, unless of course you're in that type of countryside, dust in that.
What was it like to fire?
I always thought again it was quite a good gun to fire. There was, again, you had your two hands more closely to you, so you could pull back on this one to pull it into your shoulder, and your right hand on the ready to fire. It was good to fire. You could run away with you if you let it. Especially when you're firing automatic, as opposed to single shots.
Did you fire it from the tripod, or did you practice firing it? Because some people could fire it standing up.
You could fire it standing up.
Did you practice that?
Yeah. And fired it mostly from the tripod, but you could.
Some people said it was too accurate. You know, that it just one bullet followed another, and it didn't have a spread.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, I would go along with that. I would go along with that. Yeah, it seemed that way. Even when you, providing you were holding it correctly, even when you fire an automatic, providing you've got a good sighting, you could take the ball out of the target no problem, just with that magazine of.
Would it have been better if it had a bit more of a waver, and not a waver, you know, a bit of a spread?
Spread. I don't know whether it would actually. I don't know whether it would. I mean, after all, you're lying down firing it, and you're firing it at one point, unless somebody's running around, and you have to sort of move around your body a bit to catch him up, something like that, the moving target. But I don't think it would have made that much difference.
Yeah. Now, what about other weapons? Any other automatic weapon? I mean, did we introduce the Sten? Was it
the
Sten?
Sterling.
Sterling.
Well, it was a Sten gun then, but you had your Mark II, your Mark I, Mark II, Sten, I think, and then it became the Sterling, if I can remember.
What was the difference? Was there much difference?
Well, you had a wooden butt on the Sterling, whereas on the Sten you had the steel butt. I mean, the Mark I had just like a T, so you had a steel bar and a T just which fits on your shoulder, and that's all there was. I think they used to cost about half a crown to make or something. They were good little guns. I found it ideal for clearing houses or this sort of thing, close quarter stuff. I mean, they weren't much good when you got sort of trying to fire at 100 yards or something like that. But they were a bit. They wouldn't go that far, but they weren't that accurate when you got that.
I mean, what level? I mean, I've heard, some people have said they weren't accurate beyond about 25 yards.
Well, that's pretty true, I think.
Was it difficult to control, or was it just that they literally they didn't have the accuracy?
They didn't have the accuracy. I think, in fact, everything was too loose in it, because if your working parts are not functioning in a more sort of straight line, you're not going to get the accuracy. I don't think.
Was the Sten Mark II better than the Sten Mark I, and was the Sterling better?
I can't even remember what the difference was.
What about the Sterling? Was that better?
The Sterling was a bit better. It was more robust. A bit more robust than the.
Was it better made?
Yeah, I mean, the Mark I and II looked a bit of Meccano, really, I think. And the Sterling was much better.
So it was a bit more accurate?
Well, it's a wooden butt, and it's a bit more accurate, yeah.
What about other weapons? Any other machine guns? The Vickers, were you introduced to it, or was that later, or not at all?
Well, you never done any Vickers in training. This was a thing on when you got the battalion.
What about hand grenades? Let's look at
hand grenades. Yeah.
How were you trained on the hand grenades, and which ones? Because it had a fair number in the war. Had they just gone back to the mills?
Yeah, the only ones you had really were the mills. You had the training grenades, which were painted white and had holes drilled inside, which you would use in exactly the same way as a normal grenade, except that you pull the pin out through them and then.
What was
and
the procedure? I mean, right from the start, because they were ready to throw. You had to put the fuse in, didn't you? Did you?
Yeah. Well, initially, you just packed the strong in them and looking at them, told what they were and all that sort of thing. But initially, you had to take the base plate off. And you had two holes, one larger and one small one. The detonator went in with your fuse and your striker, which set the detonator off. It was like a set like that. So you had your detonator in there and your fuse up there. So when your pin came down, it struck the detonator, burned the fuse, set off the detonator, exploded the...
So how did you throw them, having... Cricket.
Right back.
Overarm.
Yeah, overarm. Get as much height as you can.
Why? Well, some people say, why do they use the cricket throw? Why don't they use the West Indian cricket throw? Yeah. Why don't they throw...
Well, if you're standing in the trench, you've got to get the height to get him over the top. Get it over the front. I mean, I've had people sort of thrown and finish up down the front, you know. But...
It was just the safest method.
The safest method.
Could you get much distance on it?
I would think you could. I reckon you could get 30, 40 feet. Probably a bit more, depending on how good you are at it. But I quite enjoy the old grenade training, actually.
Some people are a bit nervous of them.
A lot of people are nervous of them. And And they're so easy to handle. I don't know why people are nervous though, because if you're taught correctly how to hold the grenade and pull the pin, not the old friend with the teeth, but with your finger, and you're still holding the clip, and because when you throw it, it's quite safe until you do. So once you throw it, the pin is gone, and if it explodes in the air, then so be it. But the only problem is that some people do fumble, and they're liable to drop it. And of course, if they drop it, they're going to release the pin. There are a lot of people that were frightened of it.
Now, what are the? Were you introduced to the small mortar, you know, the two-inch mortar?
Yep.
Tell me about that. Training on that.
The two-inch mortar. It was fairly easy actually, because the only way you could get your different angles was with your own. With your own lifting it up, you had no sight or anything on it as such. You had just by base. I mean, you put it at the foot of a tree or something like that, and fire it.
How'd you fire it?
Holding it.
Holding the barrel.
Yeah. Drop the bomb in. That's it. Go on. So if you wanted, I mean, you could go at that angle, at that angle, wherever you wanted it. That's the only way you could do it.
So it was a bit intuitive about where it would land.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You had to work on the sighter if you had time. If where your first one went, if it went too far, then of course you brought it down. But if it went too close, and then of course you lifted it up a bit more. That's the way you had to work it.
How did you find it? Was it easy to use? I mean,
it was reasonably easy to use, I found, anyway. Yeah.
What about, I mean, I don't know whether you still had the Piet in 46.
Yeah, you did.
Did you do it there? What do you think of the Piet?
I didn't dislike it, but the only thing I had problems with, not problems, but with reloading.
Tell me about that.
None of the times that I turned, you had to lie on your back. And because the spring was so strong, there's no way you could lift it up. So you lie on your back, the butt was probably about that long, with it fit on your shoulder, and a big pad. And you lay it on your back, put one foot each side of the barrel on the butt, and just pull till it clicked, and it was cocked. And that was all right. If you had
what was it like to fire? It was just spring powered.
Yeah, it was just spring powered, yeah. And if you weren't holding it properly, you'd finish up about 2 foot back after you fired it, you know, that sort of thing. But the...
How did you hold it? I mean, did you hold that?
Yeah, you held it with the... Because you had your trigger on it, so you pulled it back as such with both hands. If you're fairly long, you could pull it back with both hands and fire it. But sometimes you had a... Depending on the spigot coming out correctly, whether it was hanging in front of the... Hanging in the front of the pit. I've had one too like that. Doesn't matter because it won't go off or anything until it strikes the target. So,
what was their effective range?
I'm not sure. I would say about 75 yards. About 75 yards. I mean, you could use a housebreaking roll as well if you wanted. Just fire a pit in the side of the house and it would take it down. Take the wall down. That's breaking roll.
What other weapons? Any other weapons? Oh, bayonet, actually.
Oh, the bayonet, of course, yeah. Oh, yeah, bayonet.
What bayonet training did you get and how, you know?
Well, you had your stand with your sandbag or your straw bag hanging in the middle of it. Whether it was, initially you had the old pig sticker bayonet, which was a very small, like a... It was about that long.
About 8 inches?
Yeah, about 8-9 inches. And it was easy to fit on. Stick on the barrel and click, and it was on. Initially, that was... And then, of course, they brought out one later on. A different type. But...
Was it just charging this the hanging bags, then?
Just charging the hanging bags.
Were you still being trained to shout and bawl and scream?
Yeah.
What do you think of all that?
Well, everybody used to have a good laugh about it, you know. I don't know whether you would frighten anybody or not, but I mean, there'd be so much else going on at the time. If you got to that point, there'd be so much else going on at the time. I don't think you'd bother about shouting. So, truth, that sounds good, I suppose, at the time.
And Were they still doing any of the what they used to call bayonet fencing in the First World War? You know, all this business of bringing the butt through and, you know, sort of blocking, parrying, any of that stuff going on?
Not as far as I was concerned. Because they used to have the bayonet fencing type rifle. You wore a big type jacket, more like a wind cheater, but about four times as thick back in front. And it was a rifle, the body of the rifle was the same, except you had a part which you pushed in, and then that, so if you hit somebody with it, it pushed back in. They did that for a bit.
You actually did
some of that as well, yeah.
Any other weapon training?
That was about it, as far as I can remember.
Now, other sessions you might have, route marches.
Well, you did what you call your PE tests, physical endurance.
What were tests. They then?
Full kit, that's your pouches, your small pack, boots and everything else. And that was a 9-mile march. And you had to do it, I think we had to do it in 40 minutes. 40 minutes. Only 40 minutes. Can't remember. Another 40 minutes coming up somewhere. And again, that was a case of helping the crocs up, so everybody got in together. You know, and then you had your work in the gym, climbing ropes with the same kit on. What else did we have? Swimming.
Did they teach you to swim, or did they?
Well, I could swim, but they did teach you to swim. If somebody couldn't swim, then they did something else. I think I can't remember offhand, but I know we did swimming once.
It was pretty compulsory. You had to be able to swim.
Yeah. And you had it. That was the same. You had to swim with all your kit on. They probably put something like a couple of bricks in your small pack or something like that. So that sort of balanced out your kit that you normally carry in, because you couldn't put your like your socks and things in that, otherwise you get wet. But I know they just put some things in your small pack. I think you put a couple of bricks in or something.
What about the assault course work? Did you have an assault course?
We had an assault course.
What was it like?
It wasn't too drastic, actually, if I can remember, in the training. It got a bit harder when you got to the battalion then.
What sort of thing did you have up at?
You had your rope climbing, your wall, ditch. Of course, another part of the physical training was the fireman's lift. We had to carry a man for, I think it would carry for 100 yards in a certain time. This is all timed stuff. I think that is about it, as far as I can remember.
Now, what about tactical training? I mean, I know you didn't probably do a lot of that in your basic training, but how far did they teach things like how to advance, how to dig trenches?
How to dig trenches?
Was it slit trenches or the old continuous ones?
No, just slit trench. Just a slit trench initially. Yeah. Then the they teach you to do the crawls, the leopard crawl, the monkey run.
So what's the leopard crawl?
The leopard crawl is when you're on your stomach as low as possible and you're creeping along like that, on your elbows and your knees, sort of thing, with your backside down. You know, a lot of people walk around with it. Steel helmet on the backside, I think, that couldn't keep it down. Monkey run was running along on your hands or your fists and your feet.
What was the purpose of that? Just to keep low?
Just to keep low, actually. They used to call it a monkey run, but it wasn't very similar to a monkey, actually, running around.
What are the field craft or tactical training?
We did the night patrols. You had a point where you had to make two at a certain point. And that took in a lot of the stuff that you'd been taught, like the crawls. The map reading, of course, that came in as well. Um,
What about the map reading? How did it? Because you know, not everyone can read a map.
But your point with the church with a tower and church without a tower and church with a spire and the trees, copses, forests, main roads, A's, B's. Well, there wasn't a great deal of A's around at that time, but A roads, B roads, different type post office, telephone box, and all that sort of thing. Teach it. And they used to send you out or take you out in a truck and with a map, close the truck down and drop you off somewhere, and you had to make your way back. This sort of thing. That's how you practice your map reading. And that was quite interesting.
Any other training you remember? While you're with up at
Tenny Barracks.
During a day, sort of a typical day, it might be set on.
No, I think we've taken in all the day training with the
PT. What about education? PT. Did they have educational classes or regimental history?
Not when I was there.
So what time would your day finish, your training sessions? If you weren't on a night exercise, obviously, but I mean, in a normal day, what time would you...
5 o'clock, I think. 5 o'clock, I think, if I can remember.
And then what would you do?
Well, you had a sort of routine. You knew that you had your program out. So you knew that tomorrow morning we've got drill first thing. So the first thing you got to do is get your routine, get your boots done, get your kit done ready for the parade, because you have your inspection as well. So if you've got your rifle to do, then that had to be done first thing in the morning before you went on parade. And then you, after drilling, it went on to the, whatever you're going to do, the weapon training, PT or map reading or whatever.
So you'd prepare the night before, all the kit you'd need.
Always had a routine, before you went to the NAFI, well I did anyway, before you went to the NAFI you knew you got to do your kit, so do it, and then go and do it, get your cup of tea.
Did the NAFI canteen offer you? What was it like, actually, up there?
It wasn't very good, actually. It wasn't very big.
Was it just a hut, then?
Yeah, it was. Well, no, it was a brick building. It was a brick building, but it wasn't terribly big. They used to serve the general cakes and sandwiches and tea and coffee and that sort of thing.
Was it a dry one, then? No beer?
There was beer there, yeah. Yeah, we'd have beer, yeah.
Would you drink then, or...?
I've not had quite a few, yeah. but as long as I always felt that if you got a routine going where you got your kit run done first, and then you can go out and do whatever you're going to do.
Were there games and things on offer in the canteen? I mean, you know, darts or
pool. Oh yeah, darts. The pool? No pool.
Snooker or billiards?
No. Darts. You play cards or dominoes or something like that. But not much. It was fairly sort of staid, really.